Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 310 for April 3rd, 2011. Coming up in a few minutes.
It was only after 2002 when we joined WTO that we can have private distilleries. Yes, and that was one of his Mr. T.T. Lee's dream, to have his own distillery and make his own whiskey.
That's Ian Chang, the master blender for Taiwan's first whiskey distillery, King Car, which produces the award-winning Cavaland single malt whiskeys. I spent the past week in Taiwan with Ian and Dr. Jim Swan, learning the secrets behind these whiskeys, which are only available in four Asian countries for now, as well as meeting local whiskey lovers at the Cavaland Masters Dialogue Series in Taipei the other night. More on that later on, along with the calendar of events, the emails of the week, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department. First off, let's check the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Decanter number one of Gordon Ed MacPhail's Glenlivet 70-year-old went on the auction block the other night at Bonhams in Edinburgh to raise money for Japanese earthquake relief. The high bid was £15,000, or about $24,000, and an anonymous bidder won the auction. In a very generous gesture, the winner asked that the decanter be given to the people of Japan. Look for it to be put on display in a museum somewhere in Japan after things settle down. Also on the auction front, Bonhams will hold a whiskey auction at its New York City showroom on April 14th. More than 300 different lots will be on the block, including a couple of three-bottle lots of Pappy Van Winkle 23-year-old bourbon, a set of Spey Malt McAllens from Gordon Ed MacPhail, including the 1971 edition that I scored a 97 a couple of weeks ago in episode 308, and a complete set of the Bowmore Trinity series of black, white, and gold Bowmores. That's expected to bring bids of up to $20,000 for the set. There's a link to the auction catalog at the WhiskeyCast website. Maker's Mark is releasing its annual Keeneland bottle later this week, just in time for the final Thoroughbreds and Redheads weekend on April 15th and 16th. This year's charity bottling goes on sale Friday at stores in Kentucky only. The annual bottle signing party is April 15th at Keeneland Racecourse in Lexington. That's where the Maker's Mark Mile will be run later in the day. This year's bottle honors 75 years of horse racing at Keeneland. Now, we're just a month away from the Kentucky Derby, and Woodford Reserve has released its annual Derby bottle. Woodford is the official bourbon of the Kentucky Derby, and this year's bottle features a painting by artist Brett Amory highlighting two horses sprinting for the finish at Churchill Downs. This year's Derby bottle will be available in 42 U.S. states, and there's a contest for a VIP trip to next year's Derby as well. The annual run for the Roses is the first Saturday in May. And speaking of roses, Four Roses is getting ready to release its 2011 limited edition single barrel bourbon. Jim Rutledge picked an unusual recipe for this year's version. If you've heard my interviews with Jim in the past, there are 10 different Four Roses recipes with letter designations for the mash bill and yeast varieties. This year's limited edition single barrel uses recipe OBSQ, and it's the first time that recipe has been released on its own. What makes it different from the other nine is that this recipe has a nose that includes fresh rose petals, appropriate for Four Roses. It'll be available starting next month. I do have a sample of it, and I'll have my tasting notes for it later in this episode. By the way, it's already an award-winning whiskey. It received a double gold medal this past week in the San Francisco World Spirits Competition. The Thomas H. Handy Rye from Buffalo Trace's Antique Collection took Best in Show honors for whiskeys, while the George T. Stagg Bourbon from the same series was named Best Bourbon. The Kingdom 17-year-old Scotch, which is sold primarily in South Korea, was named Best Blended Scotch. Kalila's Distiller's Edition was named Best Single Malt Scotch. The Michael Collins 10-year-old Single Malt was named Best Irish Whiskey, and Centauri's Yamazaki 18 Best Other Whiskey, which is a catch-all category for whiskeys that don't fall into other neat categories. There is a link to the complete list of medal winners at the WhiskeyCast website. The Scotch Whiskey Association has released its final export figures for 2010, and while volume was down slightly, the value of Scotch whiskey exports hit a new record of £3.45 billion, or almost $5.6 billion. That's up 10% from 2009. Single malt exports gained 18% last year, while blended Scotch exports were up by 5%. Of course, blends make up most of the export sales. The top 10 export markets by value, the U.S., France, Spain, Singapore, South Africa, South Korea, Germany, Taiwan, Greece, and the United Arab Emirates. Finally, in the last episode, I mentioned that Auchentoshan Distillery near Glasgow had scheduled an open day and festival for June 18th. Got word from the folks at Morrison Bowmore this week that the plans have changed, and the open day will become a biennial event. The distillery will be open for visitors as usual that day, but with no special activities planned. And that's the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well-made. Let's check the emails of the week now, and I'd like to welcome a new sponsor. Johnny Walker is coming on board as one of the sponsors of the emails of the week. For the past year, Diageo's Oban and the Singleton of Glendullen single malts have been co-sponsoring the emails along with Highland Park. Diageo has renewed for another year, as has Highland Park, and is bringing Johnny Walker to the party now. If you remember my discussion with Ludo de Crook of Grants last time around, and my comparison of whiskies to photography and the tonal ranges in a photograph, well, I heard from a few photographers this week who picked up on the analogy right away. James Shanks of Brooklyn, New York, had this to say. Just listened to the last show. I was one of the people that knows exactly what you mean by your tonal range analogy, and come to think of it, it's an excellent point. It's kind of like a complex, well-aged whiskey is to an original Ansel Adams print, as a cheap, paint-thinner-esque whiskey is to a crappy disposable camera printed at a drugstore. You could expand this further and compare over- and underexposure to the maturation as well. Anyone can buy an expensive camera and dangle it around their neck, but that doesn't mean they've ever taken a good picture. Just as fancy packaging and a nice label doesn't mean the whiskey inside is any good. Now, Shai Gilboa, a good friend and fellow photographer, emailed from Israel after I posted some photos of the Taiwan trip on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page this week. Hi, Mark. Glad to see you having a blast at Taiwan. Keep those great pictures coming. I just listened to the latest episode yesterday and found your equivalent of the Grants range in tastes and layers to f-stops very, very helpful. Actually, I found that I can relate to that more than I can relate to some taste notes sometimes given. For example, bacon and Christmas cake, as I never tried either, though might try the latter one day. In fact, just after you compared it to about 10 or 11 f-stops, which as we know is the full range of the Ansel Adams zone system, I thought, why not, in a way and just for fun, establish a whiskey flavors zone system, or f-stops system if you like. For example, establishing zone 0 as the lightest, fruitiest, or whatever, and zone 11 as the most heavy. I think this could be a fun experiment. In person, anyways, I think I can relate to a zone 7 and 2/3 stops whiskey than I can to a numerical grade. Not saying cancel the grades, just saying help whiskey-loving photographers. Shai, I don't think we're going to go that far, but thanks for the kind words. By the way, Shai also wanted me to post a photo of the Bat Cave, which is my family's affectionate term for my office and studio. I know we're not going to go that far. Heard from Matthew Waller in Castle Hill, Australia. He's a regular emailer and told us a while back about his Distant Thunder Whiskey Club. He sent along an update this week. Hi, Mark. Here's a new one for you. As you know, we have our small Distant Thunder Whiskey Club here in Australia. Not that it is a men's club, but at this stage it is just the lads. On the nights we meet, so do our other halves, and what do they talk about, you may ask? Here is a clue. My wife just started this a couple of days ago for the girls. The website is marriedtothewhiskeyclub.blogspot.com. My wife does listen to your podcast. As you may recall, I mentioned she likes the sound of your voice a little too much a while back. It would be swell if at some stage you had time to give them a little shout-out on WhiskeyCast if you're willing. As always, take it easy and dram on. Regards, Matthew. All I can say is, Matthew, you guys are in trouble. There's a link to the blog at the WhiskeyCast website, and if you have something you'd like to share with the world, we'd love to hear from you. My email address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and the emails of the week are brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you, as always, by Laphroaig. This is Tartan Week in New York City. Whiskey Live New York is this coming Wednesday night. The Inverness Whiskey Fest is this coming weekend in Inverness, Scotland, along with the Wexo Whiskey Festival in Wexo, Sweden. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's U.S. chapter has single malt extravaganzas on the 13th in Houston and the 14th in Dallas, and the Whiskey Guild has a tasting cruise on the 14th in Philadelphia. Next week is also Whiskey Week in Chicago. The highlight is Malt Advocates Whiskey Fest on the 15th. The Ardbeg Committee's second annual U.S. Summit is the 16th in Chicago, along with a Koval Distillery Lion's Pride tasting that same day at Delilah's in Chicago. Finally, the Spirit of Speyside Festival starts April 28th and runs through May 2nd in the Spey Valley region of Scotland. Those are just a few of the events going on this month. You'll find a full calendar at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig. Just click the Laphroaig banner at the WhiskeyCast website to become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Iowa. I'd like to welcome another new sponsor to WhiskeyCast this week. Morrison Bowmore's Glengarry and Auchentoshan single malts are coming on board to bring you our WhiskeyCast in-depth segment each week. As I mentioned earlier, I spent the week in Taiwan visiting King Car Distillery, which makes the Cavalan and King Car single malt whiskies. These whiskies have won several awards over the last couple of years, even though they're very young and not widely available. That has whiskey lovers all over the world very curious. And I went to Taiwan hoping to answer some questions about Cavalan. I'm walking with Ian Chang, the master blender for Cavalan single malt whiskey at the distillery here in Yilan in Taiwan. And we're walking along what would be best described as almost a forest of types. There are all sorts of trees planted around here. We're in the shadow of the mountains. This is a very interesting, very beautiful place. How did it come to be located here?
Right. This plant was originally planned for our natural water bottling plant. And it was later in 2005 when we decided to make whiskey. And then because of the water here is pure, and also we have an abundant amount of it here. And that's why the distillery is also located here. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why did the Lee family decide to get into whiskey making after so many years of making other consumer goods, various coffees, bottled water products, and other goods? Why whiskey?
Because Mr. Lee, Mr. T.T. Lee himself, is also a whiskey connoisseur himself, and he likes whiskey so much. Plus, when Taiwan joined the WTO in 2002, and that means the government will have to, let the distilling industry, privatized. And that's why we started to plan our distillery, because it used to be state-owned only, monopoly system in Taiwan. It was only after 2002 when we joined WTO that we can have private distilleries. Yes, and that was one of his Mr. T.T. Lee's dream, to have his own distillery and make his own whiskey. Yes, and I'm very glad that I'm honored to be able to participate, as part of it. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Tell me what went into the early efforts to make your whiskeys, because I know it wasn't easy getting started originally, right?
That's right. Sorry, Mark, what do you mean?
You had some growing pains, didn't you, getting started?
That's right. In the early days, we didn't really know, how to, the word is harness the climate. And after the guidance of Dr. Jim Swan, he showed us that, the weather here is actually can be turned from our disadvantage into our advantage, because we managed to capture the energy from the sun and then to make it work for us, which means faster maturation as a result.
Mm-hmm. The temperatures here on average are about 15 degrees Celsius higher than in Scotland, so that that explains part of the ability to mature your whiskeys so quickly and have them taste much more mature at a much younger age than otherwise possible. But there had to be some other secrets in there, or at least some other research to make the whiskeys in the first place of a style that could mature quickly, right?
Right. The faster maturation, I would say that is, you know, is a combination of the weather and also a selection of good casks. Plus, of course, when it's during the new make, how do you say that? The new make will have to be also made in a very strict procedure. In other words, I would say that it's because of our attention to details that we try to make every stage properly, and as a result, plus the heat, then the whiskey can be matured in a faster way. And
Is your new make lighter than comparable spirits from Scotland, or is it a heavier style?
I would say medium, not very heavy, but not very light either. It's somewhere in between. That's right. I would say very close to Macallan or Glenlivet, that style, yes. Mm-hmm.
And you're sourcing your barrels from the same sources in Kentucky and all over the world that many other, your colleagues in Scotland get them from, right?
That's right. We buy our ex-bourbons from the States, and plus some other refills from all over the world, and some sherry butts as well. Yes. So in a way, we try to make our casks, you know, as a wide variety in order to increase the complexity of the whiskey. Mm-hmm.
What about this distillery is different for the first-time visitor compared to other distilleries that one might have seen in the past?
I would say that our distillery, obviously because of its young age, so that in a way is more modern and newer, that's the word, yeah, newer than say distilleries in Scotland or in Japan. So this is a new distillery. Mm-hmm.
And you've been able to take advantage of all the technological advances and start with really a clean slate of in the design process compared to what your predecessors have been working with, right?
That's right, yes. The design is more contemporary, yeah, in terms of appearance and everything, yes. Hmm.
But also in terms of equipment, in terms of automation, in terms of the process too, right?
That's right. I mean, the distillery is virtually, you know, fully automatic. And it's only when it comes to blending that it's, human involved. But during the new make production, it's all computerized. We try to make the quality consistent. Hmm. Yes.
We're in the mashing room right now, and you're using pretty much state-of-the-art equipment in here, in virtually every form of this distillery. Yet, as we're in here, you just pointed out that we're getting a little bit of a sourness off this mash tonight, or from last night's run. So what happens now?
What happens now is I'll quickly get our personnel to get rid of this as soon as possible. Yes, but normally we would, you know, by the end of mashing, the draft will be got rid of immediately. But because apparently last night they were very busy doing something else, so this will be done the next day. But this doesn't happen often.
And we're looking at the draft. We're not looking at the actual masher. We're looking at the leftovers, right?
That's right. This is the leftover draft from last night. Yeah. Now,
do you do like your colleagues in Scotland and Kentucky and use this for cattle food?
In Taiwan, we actually use part of this to be made into biscuits, because we think that this is high in fiber and with a little bit protein left. So this is actually, you know, good stuff to be, can be consumed by human beings. Yes.
Okay. Mm,
Yeah.
That's unusual because nobody else uses it to feed people, but if it works, it works, right?
Yeah, that's right. And it's good for your bowel movement because of the fiber. Yes. I personally tried that. Yeah, it works.
Mm. Thanks for sharing, Ian. We are in the still house now. There are two pairs of stills, the low wine stills and the spirit stills. The spirit safe is open right now. Let's see if we can get just a little bit of sound of spirit flowing. And I'm here. Go ahead, Ian.
This is the hard run of our distillation. Yes. Very clean and fragrant.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm getting those mango and pineapple notes you mentioned earlier. A little bit of coconut as well.
A little bit. Yes.
Very nice and clean.
That's right.
I should also point out we've been joined on this trip by Dr. Jim Swan, the noted distilling industry consultant, and the guy who really gets a lot of the credit for helping Cavalan and King Carr get these stills running properly in the first place. Jim, characterize this spirit for us when you see it coming off the stills.
I think it's a very clean, fruity, fragrant. You can go into various descriptions of the fruitiness, but the general terms are bananas, mangoes, green apples, and it's a very clean spirit. It's very carefully produced. That's why we get the very fine end result of purity. You know?
Ian gave you credit earlier for helping them come up with a formula that allows this whiskey to mature at much earlier ages, not just because of the temperatures here and the climate, but because of the way the spirit is designed. How did you guys come up with this spirit style to make it work so well?
Right. In maturation, first of all, the hot climate helps. We're all being encouraged to save energy nowadays. Well, energy is saved here by using the energy from the sun. But that doesn't help certain maturation characteristics. There are features which are inversely proportional to temperature. And what we do is, through the new make production, we get the flavors in the new make rather than waiting for them in maturation. So we don't have to wait more than a couple of years before the spirit is ready as whiskey.
But how do you do that specifically, or can you say?
Well, it's a combination of the malt, the mashing, the fermentation. So it's optimizing everything and building in features which will give the oxidation type of flavors in the spirit at the end. So it's too complex. There's no one magic solution. There's no magic bullet. You know?
Let's put it in comparison, though, because one of your other clients is Kilhoman on Islay,
yes,
which has also been able to get whiskies to mature very well at very young ages. It doesn't have the climate advantages that Cavalan has here. It has the traditional Scottish Islay climate. But what's the difference in the spirits between the two that allows them to both be good at such early ages?
It's a different formula for optimization of the Kilhoman spirit. In the maturation, it's a cool climate, so we don't have to worry about building some flavors into the new make Kilhoman. But you still have to get every stage optimized and get a clean spirit. Kilhoman you can drink as new spirit because it's sufficiently clean. It's only matured because the law says it has to be.
And I guess we ought to see just how this tastes when it's new as well from Cavalan and King Carr. And like I said before, we've got those the green apples, a little bit of pineapple, the mango notes on here in the nose, but
it's intended to be fruity because the style of whiskey which people, particularly in the Far East, like, but actually throughout the whole world. But
let me ask you to repeat that.
The style was also developed for the flavors which are particularly enjoyed in the Far East. Well, they are enjoyed throughout the world, but in the Far East, people like fruity, non-peaty whiskies, and they often drink whiskey with their food. So you have to make a whiskey which complements the food and doesn't fight it. A peaty whiskey usually would, unless you're eating smoked salmon or some kind of smoked fish.
Now, this is the most unusual new make I've ever tasted, because my mouth immediately went to full pucker status from the tartness right on the front of my mouth, behind the lips, and on the tip of the tongue. And then you get that spiciness that develops afterwards, but What are these characteristics of?
First of all, it should be very sweet on the mouth, because we've avoided putting bitter flavors into it as far as we can. Maturation will take a little bit of bitterness out, but it should not be particularly bitter. I don't actually know what stage of this distillation we're at. It'll become more bitter as we get to the end of the heart cut. The other flavors are built in, I say, from the selection of the raw materials and the fermentation time, fermentation temperature. Those fermenters have got, there's coils and you'll see that the wall is quite thick. That's because there's cooling coils in there, so we can keep the temperature where we want it. We have a temperature profile, but it's a controlled temperature profile.
One of the things that I noticed was just that those fruit flavors are in there, obviously, but there is still just this sort of residual finish on the new make spirit that is still a couple of minutes after I've tasted it, and it's still there. It still lingers very nicely.
Right. That's nice to hear. It's the way it was intended. But you know, there's all manner of things we're doing in there which are unique. And you mentioned, you were talking earlier to us about the yeast, for example. Well, it's a special yeast mixture that is used in there. You know, it's not just any old yeast, you know, from the local supplier. It's a yeast mixture designed for flavor production and alcohol.
And it certainly helps to have a parent company that also has a massive biotechnology lab in the same complex too, right?
It's that. They have great abilities in yeast technology, which, you know, were not previously brought to bear in whiskey production.
What can the rest of the industry learn from Cavalan and King Carr?
Careful production, optimizing every stage of production, doing it carefully, being true to the method you need, you know, to get good whiskey. Never hurrying up. They never speed things up here. If the demand for whiskey increases a little bit, they don't increase speed. For example, they don't cut corners. And that's one of the big secrets to making good whiskey. Do it carefully.
When we were talking the other night, you mentioned that you and Ian had come over here late one night just to check up on the overnight staff. And they were still following everything true to form, by the book, and keeping it consistent. And we wouldn't always see that in Scotland, would we?
No, that's true. It's always the case. Been the case in Scotland. And it depends on the distillery, but it's been the case that if you want to find out the indiscretions, you go in during the night, because nobody's paying attention to the men at night, and you know they want to get their shift finished and so on. Very understandable. That's not criticising everyone, but there's a natural temptation to cut corners. It's a human temptation. In here, we did come in one night quite recently and check up. And not only did we find they were doing everything very carefully, they'd actually decided that in the meantime they felt that this particular still here, rather than the other one, should run just a little bit slower. So they'd actually slowed it down a little bit, which means it was going to take them even longer to finish their distillation run. So that's how careful they are about what they're doing.
What is the potential here? I know that there's a sign as you enter the distillery that this is a 100-year distillery project, and they're only in year 6 right now. And that sign also says that their goal is to be one of the top 5 malt whiskey companies in the world. Is this achievable?
Oh, yes. Well, I think you see the whiskey as it is. It's doing fairly well at the moment. It's only 6 years. When I first talked to Mr. T.T. Lee, who is the chairman of the company, He made it very clear he was in for the long term, and that he wants a distilling industry in Taiwan, and this is his first distillery. It's not beyond the bounds of possibility he'll build as many as it takes, you know, as many as he can sell whiskey from. He wants a Taiwanese whiskey industry, because the Taiwanese actually love their whiskey. They're a country of 20 to 30 million people, and yet they're one of Scotch's biggest markets. I think they're number 5, number 6, round about there. So they do love whiskey. So what he's keen in doing is providing them with good whiskey. And they're very, as we can see, very capable of doing it. And still time to learn a lot more.
And time to start exporting as well to the rest of the world.
Yes, I mean, I'm that's something I'm personally encouraging them to do. Because the rest of the world, as you know, We're going around the world and people are saying, that Carvalan, where can I get some? You know, everyone says it's good. So I think it's time to make it available.
Now, as I mentioned before, there are two sets of full-size pot stills. You also have a set of other stills as well, column-type stills, right?
That's right. We also have Holstein stills from Germany in addition to our pot stills, yes.
What are you using the Holstein stills for?
We also use them to make whiskey, yes. And they produce a different style of whiskey, which because we aim to give consumers more choices. That's right.
Will you mix the two types together?
There's a possibility. In the future, we might have three styles, the pot still, Holstein stills, and also the mixture of the two. That's also, you know, possibility. So we keep our options open for the future.
But the current Carvalan releases are all pot still, right?
That's right. Currently, they're all from full-size pot stills.
I have to ask, what do you think, when you see the reaction that your whiskeys have received around the world? As Jim and I were talking, we mentioned that both of us have heard from people who want to know where they can get this whiskey. And they want to know, is it really as good as everybody says it is? And I can say that, yes, it is as good as you've been hearing. But what do you think when you start seeing all these comments about your whiskeys?
Well, I take that as a compliment and also encouragement. As Dr. Swan says, you know, we still have a long way to go, but that is a good encouragement for us to keep going forward. And we would really like to have our whiskey exported to, say, for example, America, Canada, and Europe, for people to share with whiskey connoisseurs. That's right. That's our plan for the future. We would like to do that as well, yes.
I mentioned earlier the sign at the front as you walk into the distillery that talks about this being a 100-year project and the goal of becoming one of the top 5 malt whiskey distilleries in the world. You guys don't do anything short-term, do you? You keep an eye on the long-term with everything you do, right?
That's right, because this is Mr. T.T. Lee's policy. Whenever he does something, he would like to do it for the long run and not just, you know, for a short while. And that's why he always has a long-term plan for his business. He himself is a visionary. That's right.
Now, Mr. Lee is investing in whiskeys that he will likely never be able to drink because they'll be maturing years from now. What about his family? Are they as committed to this as he is?
That's right. Mr. Lee's elder son, Mr. Y.T. Lee, who is our general manager. That's right. He's also a very committed man, you know, to do the business as well. That's right.
And this will continue on for generations to come?
Yes. We think so. Yes. That's right.
I want to bring Jim back in on this because we were talking about King Carr's biotechnology facilities here, and there's a point that needs to be emphasized here to keep everybody happy on the legal side of terms when it comes to whiskey. I want you to explain the yeast here because we talked about them using special yeasts, but they're standard brewing yeasts, just of a different variety, right?
That's right. The strain is slightly different, but these are all Saccharomyces cerevisiae, which is the standard brewing yeast which creates alcohol. That they're all of that type, and there are no enzymes used in the process at all. They might be legal here. I've no idea. They are in some countries, not in others, but they're not used in any way. It's a very basically traditional process.
It's a traditional process, but taken to the ultimate in technology, right?
That's right. It's optimizing the quality at every possible stage. That doesn't mean you have to change the technology.
And there's no cutting corners here either. It's all... This is a distilling room and a still room that any still operator in Scotland could walk into and feel instantly at home almost.
That's correct. And you could move this operation to Scotland and it would be totally legal because... That's how it's run. That's the technology used meets the law in Europe.
And that's critical for when these whiskies eventually are exported to Europe, they have to meet the Scotch whiskey standards, at least in terms of being able to be called malt whiskey. They have to meet those same quality standards, right?
That's right. They have to be 3 years old for sale in Europe. They don't have to be in Taiwan. They don't have to be in some other countries. But there is 3 year old that could go into Europe. We actually got some 4 year old that could go into Europe right now.
And it went in unofficially, right?
Unofficially, it's never been exported to Europe. I mean, obviously, some people have carried bottles back. They've maybe been sold in some countries, small merchants. I wouldn't know, but it has cropped up in Europe, and we acknowledge that. But it was never exported to Europe as such.
We've moved from the distillery proper into the visitors' center now, and I have to tell you that by way of comparison, just to put the size of the visitors' center in perspective, about 1 million people come through this visitors' center a year for a distillery that's only about 6 to 7 years old. And the visitors' center portion itself, you could fit the entire campus of some distilleries in Scotland into the visitors' center by itself. We're on the second floor, which is a coffee cafe for the Mr. Brown coffee brand that King Car sells here in Taiwan. And it is the biggest coffee bar I've ever seen. It takes up the entire second floor here. Now, Ian mentioned a few minutes ago in the too much information department about what they do with the draft and making it into biscuits. But they also don't waste anything at this distillery in terms of you take actually some of the wort and the mash and turn it into a non-alcoholic beer, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right, Mark. We take some of our wort and then we sterilize it and then make it into our so-called Kavlan Mons, which is a wort drink. That's right. And it's very popular with young kids. Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's got sort of a black cherry aroma taste to it in a lot of ways when I just took a sip of it. And again, completely non-alcoholic. But this comes out of the genesis of King Car as a drinks company in general, right?
That's right. That's right. Because King Car has past 30 to 40 years beverage experience. So we turned this malt into, you know, part of the beverage drink. And the taste is also similar to sugarcane juice, which is sweet in character. And that's very popular with kids. Mm.
And you've also created a series of whiskey highballs mixing your cola drinks with the whiskey as well, right?
That's right. We also have we call Kavlan highballs. One is whiskey with Coke, and the other one is whiskey with soda. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, to be part of our cocktail series. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you've done over the years and have won a lot of awards for the Solist series of your single cask bottlings. I saw a poster as we were walking through here that said that this is more of a soloist than a solist. And I'd like to get you to explain what you guys mean by that, because I saw the term soloist and I'm going, okay, it's got to be a typo, it's got to be a translation, because we're talking soloist, but that's clearly not the case. Explain this to me.
Right. That sentence was actually said by Jim Murray, the famous author for Whiskey Bible. Basically, what he meant was he thinks that soloist is a very good representation as a, you know, just like a person who is playing soloist. But, I mean, the word soloist is modified by us to get rid of the O in the middle, to make it into a two-syllable word, soloist, make consumers easier to pronounce. And basically, the sentence I think Jim Murray tried to say was, it's a very good representation of a single cask product. I mean, whiskey, single cask. Mm-hmm.
When did you start working with the single casks? Because I know you spent a couple of years trying to get the regular main Kavlan single malt whiskey down first, and then came out with the Concertmaster and the other series of Solist releases that have won a number of awards, including awards in the most last two World Whiskies Awards competitions. How did you start picking the casks that were going to go into these single cask bottlings and cask strength bottlings?
Right. For this one, I discussed with Dr. James Swan, you know, how do we select casks to be our part of our Solis series. So we then decided that as long as the product has two characters, which means the character of the cask and also the character of Coverland's style, if the product can show these two characters at the same time, then we choose it to be part of our Solis. For example, Solis X Bourbon, it has the character of bourbon whiskey from the cask previous use, which is vanilla, honey, and coconut, plus our Coverland's style, which is mango with green apple and cherry. So the combination of these two characters can be found in our Solis series. Mm-hmm.
Your newest release doesn't carry the Coverland name. It finally carries the King Carr name and is called King Carr Single Malt Whiskey. Why did it take, in Coverland terms, so long to come out with a King Carr whiskey, and what went into picking that one out?
Right, that's because the owner of this company, Mr. T.T. Lee, he would like to have a whiskey to represent the whole group, which is King Carr Group. So we, once again, I talked to Dr. Jim Swan, how do we go about, you know, in order to bring out the character of King Carr Group. And King Carr Group has a impression of multi-area diversity of business. So we thought if we want to to have that shown in a whiskey, perhaps we can use the flavor. And that's why we don't do chill filtration, and we raise the strength up to 46 in order to retain the most flavors and fragrance. And also with the special selection of the casks, we make the background fruitiness into more complex and also multi-layered in order to represent the company's image.
That's right. Mm.
And this is only being sold in Taiwan now, right?
At the moment, yes. And by the way, Mark, for that King Carr with single malt whiskey, it has just been... we have just heard the news last week in San Francisco World Spirits Competition has a gold medal from this year's SWSC. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Congratulations. I think I actually put tasting notes for it up on the show a couple of weeks ago as well, from the sample that you sent over a while back. And will we see more King Carr whiskeys in addition to Coverland?
That's right. This conductor, King Carr Single Malt Conductor, is actually the first of many more to come in the future. So we still have more surprises for consumers. Yes, hopefully.
There's a link to Coverland's English website at the WhiskeyCast website. I'd like to thank Ian, the Lee family, and the entire King Carr Distillery staff for their hospitality this past week. And since I don't speak a single word of Chinese, I really need to thank Yvonne Chow and Joni Tseng for spending the week as a combination of tour guides and translators. Finally, I do want to disclose that King Carr covered my travel expenses for the visit. This week's WhiskeyCast In-Depth is brought to you by Glengarry, non-chill filtered, full Highland character. Now you'll find tasting notes for almost all of the Coverland and King Carr whiskeys on the WhiskeyCast website, but the newest release in the Solis series is finished in Vinho Barrique casks, and let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with it. It's bottled at 59.4% ABV. The nose reminds me of green grapes, green apples, and green grass. The taste is darker, though, thick, chewy, and almost rubbery, with cinnamon, licorice, and subtle touches of dried grapes and apples. The finish is thick and lingering with subtle cinnamon, a lemon-lime tartness, and a touch of cooked bananas. It's a unique whiskey. I'm scoring the Coverland Solis Vino Barrique finish an 86. I mentioned the Four Roses 2011 limited edition single barrel release earlier in this episode. My sample was bottled at 59% ABV, but since it's a single barrel, the bottling proofs will vary a bit with each barrel. The nose is light and floral for a bourbon, with dried rose petals, subtle honey, and a hint of brown sugar. The taste starts off much like the nose, light and floral, but a duel between cinnamon and molasses soon begins and lasts for a long time all the way through the finish. Both fade away very slowly and reveal touches of red apples and nutmeg as they do. It's a very smooth and easy-to-drink bourbon. I'm scoring the Four Roses 2011 Limited Edition Single Barrel a 91. Of course, all of my tasting notes are available in the WhiskeyCast apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android. The iPhone and iPad version is sponsored by the Glenrothes, and the Android version is sponsored by Ben Romick. They're also available at the WhiskeyCast website, and that's also where you'll find the calendar of events, links to the WhiskeyCast Facebook page and my Twitter feed, the WhiskeyCast store, powered by Amazon.com, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is www.whiskeycast.com, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2011, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.